So today I spoke with Ilya, the founder of VanHack. It was a really interesting story. I mean, he started this business 10 years ago. It's been actually it's been a long haul. And I think that's the reality for most startups. You know, it's fun to kind of dive into the biggest successes, and there's obviously a lot to learn from them. But I think sometimes it's also, at least for me, good to like mix in some of the most realistic cases, right? I mean, here's somebody who's built a startup for a decade, who actually had to bootstrap most of the time because VCs really didn't get it in the early days. He goes through how he started with a very niche idea and then kind of expanded over time. And now he's helped 2,000 people immigrate and literally like change their entire lives. And in the meantime, he's built a business that's successful and just spits out cash flow every single year. Which honestly, for like 90% plus of founders, that's like really what success looks like. And so hopefully you'll learn as much as I did from this episode. Welcome to the Product Market Fit Show, brought to you by Mistral, a seed stage firm based in Canada. I'm Pablo. I'm a founder turned VC. My goal is to help early stage founders like you find product market fit. Ilya, welcome to the Product Market Fit Show.
Thanks, Pablo. Excited to be here.
Really curious to understand how it all started and then how you got to where you are today. So maybe let's really start there. Like, let's start at the beginning. I guess the first question, and this is what I often ask, is how did you come up with VanHack in the first place? Like, where were you at the time? What was happening? And what was idea number one?
Definitely. For me, it's a really personal business. It really connected to who I am and my background. So I think it's important to note or kind of start with the fact that the first memory of my life was actually immigrating. I was getting on a flight from the city I was born in Siberia, flying to Moscow, and then flying to Tel Aviv to move from the Soviet Union to Israel in 1991. It's literally the first thing I remember in my life. So immigration.
How old were you at the time?
I was 2.5.
Okay.
So I was pretty young. And ever since I remember, I've been an immigrant, and it's been a big part of who I am and what I believe in. And so fast forward a few, you know, decades later, I graduated from university and got 3 job offers, one in Brazil, one in China, one in India. I ended up going with the one in Brazil because that one, I had been there before and I really enjoyed my time there. And it also was the best paying offer. So I went to live in Brazil, and that turned into this kind of 4-year journey where I ended up joining a startup accelerator in Rio, kind of the YC or Techstars of Brazil back in 2012, and was kind of the token foreigner who was doing the sales and marketing and talking to investors, while most of the other guys were on the tech side, you know, CTOs and software engineers.
First of all, you mentioned like 2.5 years old, you move from Siberia ultimately to Israel. Is that right?
Yeah. We lived in a little settlement in the West Bank. So it's kind of timely now with everything going on in the world. But
wild.
Yeah. It's sort of called Ofra. It's outside of Jerusalem.
And now you live in Vancouver. You also lived in Brazil. Like, what's that story? Did you go from Israel to Canada?
Yeah. From when I was 5, we moved to Vancouver, 93, right before the Canucks Stanley Cup run. So I remember like the riot happening outside. So diehard Canucks fan ever since then.
And did you say you'd been to Brazil before? Like you kind of decide, I mean, it's not normal to get a job offer from, you know, it's more yeah. normal the other way around, right? Than to go to Brazil. So like, just what was the tie there to Brazil? I think it's important with what you ended up building.
Yeah. So I was doing kind of undergraduate business at Cornell, and a lot of my friends were going to work on Wall Street or consulting. And I really wanted to get an international opportunity. I thought that'd be kind of a differentiator in my career, and kind of the time to go abroad is when you're young, at least for a short amount of time to try it out. I was part of this because I was on the swim team. I also was worked and I was part of some leadership groups. I got this scholarship called Cornell Tradition, which gave me $4,000 of credit towards any travel volunteer work that I did. And usually people get that in their first year of university. And I got it in my senior year. So instead of having 4 years spent, I only had one. So basically did everything I could that year. Like on winter break, I went to Africa. And then spring break, I went to Brazil. I actually vividly remember I think it was December or January of my senior year. It was snowing outside upstate New York, freezing cold. And I was like, hey, I have this opportunity to travel abroad. where should I go? And my buddy's like, dude, you got to go to Brazil. You got to go to Florianopolis. It's where, you know, all the supermodels from Victoria's Secret are from. And it's a great place and you'll love it. And then I realized later doing research that like there's no volunteer jobs there because like it's a pretty well-off part of the country. So I ended up going to Rio de Janeiro and doing volunteer work there with an organization called Halal.
Once you're in Brazil, you decide to join this accelerator. Like, did you have a startup idea at the time, or how did that even come about?
No, that was another random thing. A friend of mine from university posted on my Facebook wall. This is back, you know, dating myself, right? How old this is? About this accelerator. It's called 21212. They've since shut down, but basically it was 21 is the Rio area code and 212 is for New York. So I was an American guy from New York and a Brazilian guy from Rio who started it. And it was connecting American investors with Brazilian startups. They're way ahead of their time, actually, because right now LATAM investing is huge. You know, Nubank and a lot of other startups have come out since. A friend of mine, sister, told me that they're having their angel day on a, you know, specific day and gave me the address. And I just showed up. And people, like, just assumed that I was an angel investor. So it was pretty funny because I was just like, broke college student who had just quit their job. And because people, you know, I look like I'm a foreigner, I don't look like Brazilian. So people just assumed that I was one of those American investors that came to invest in their startup. So they started pitching me. And then like one of the guys there had done an internship in Vancouver, or like studied English in Vancouver. So him and I kind of became friends over that. And he's like, yeah, anytime you want to come by, just swing by the accelerator and hang out. I was at the time volunteering for a nonprofit. And so I was looking for like a real job. And then one of the guys who was in the accelerator, I kind of got wind by hanging out with them that he was going to get kicked out because he was just a technical guy and he didn't have any business acumen, at least at the point. Not that I should say like that, but he didn't have the strong business side. And so I actually randomly ran into him and a few of the other guys on Ipanema Beach on a Sunday. And I just like turned to him and said, hey, like, I think what you're doing is really cool. It was a social network to help students get jobs. I was like, oh, I think what you're doing is really cool. Could I join as a co-founder? Give me 10% equity.
Once you're in this accelerator, really what you start doing is, besides working on the startup, you start helping a bunch of different people who are more technical, technical types that don't, you know, certainly not strong, let's say in English. And so selling into and pitching into like that investor audience, and you're helping them bridge that gap. Is that kind of what?
I was just focused on my startup. So when I was in the accelerator, I was just like, okay, we got this, we have this company, like let's raise money. You know, I remember like learning what a pivot was and learning about Y Combinator and like kind of drinking the startup Kool-Aid back then. It's really when I got my exposure into the world, like what an MVP was, Lean Startup, Eric Ries, Steve Blank, like all those, like learning all that. It was like drinking from a fire hose there. Cause like, you know, people think like you lived in Rio de Janeiro, you must have just like partying and on the beach all day, but it actually was like the hardest I've ever worked in my life. One of the hardest times I've ever worked in my life was when I was living in Rio. I was in the office the whole day, like up till 10 PM or later.
We're doing Brazil Saturdays. Wrong, man.
Yeah. Well, I had fun too, I won't lie, but, you definitely kind of was in the like demo day. There's a countdown. I remember, they had like a countdown on the wall, days left to demo day, even hours left to demo day. I forget exactly.
And so then you go to Canada, you're talking about once you go back to Vancouver, you put up a landing page. What is this landing page about? Like what are you even pitching at this point?
Yeah. So the original idea I had was to help people, cause I was really working in the ed tech space in Brazil. I didn't know that you can actually like get paid to do recruiting. I knew of like job boards and I knew of like online schools. And I really liked the online school model where you can create content once and sell it many times. Like we were kind of like a Udemy model. I moved back to Vancouver, Canada Day, actually July 1st, 2024, sorry, 2014. I just started getting a lot of messages on Facebook because I posted pictures of, I'm pretty active on social media. And so I posted pictures on just saying like, oh, I'm super happy to be back in Vancouver, like really nice picture of the False Creek and stuff. And people start commenting on those and be like, oh, this is so beautiful. One day I'd like to be there, like in Portuguese. And some people DM'd me about it. And so I thought like, maybe if we can help people learn how to code, come to Vancouver, learn how to code, and then that way they can kind of move here or like improve their careers. And so that was the first idea of the landing page. And I just threw it up on a lot of Facebook groups and people started signing up. Like I think we got like 50 signups in the first day. The pitch was come to Vancouver, learn how to code and something like that and move to Vancouver. So I originally thought the people who would first like want to come to Canada, like to buy my course or take the program. Well, actually, originally I thought it would be like an in-person course. People would fly here, which then, you know, realize it's like super expensive. Getting visas is a challenge.
I was going to say, I'm like, really? That's a big ask. Okay.
Yeah, cool. Because I don't know, I just threw something against the wall.
That's right.
And I had an inkling though that there was something there. I didn't know exactly what it was.
If I remember correctly, when you were helping people with the resumes, you were unemployed, right, at that time? Like, is that just an irony? I was just thinking about it.
Yeah. That's actually funny. This other detail. So I ended up like just not the Brazilian startups didn't work out. That's a whole other long story. But ran out of money and. I just didn't get along with the co-founders. So I ended up getting another job, moving to Sao Paulo. I got let go from that job and I came back to Vancouver with my then girlfriend, now wife, Giselle, and her and I were living together with my parents at 26 years old in my back in the room that I grew up in. And I was also like looking for a job because, I was thinking like, I want to marry this girl, but how could I marry her? But I don't have a job. So I went to all these meetups and I started like looking for roles, applying to jobs. It's funny, a few of the companies that I applied to ended up becoming customers of Anhack, like Mobify and Hootsuite. And on Bounce too, I actually applied to work there.
And so what ends up happening, like you get this kind of first customer, which is a huge deal, $40, and then Does that like become a real business? Like how long, because you ended up, I would say, let's say pivoting or evolving maybe into something bigger around recruiting, which is what we're doing, what you're doing now and what we'll talk about shortly. How long were you running this kind of career coaching service and how did that grow?
Yeah, I think we launched the official website in January of 2015. It wasn't incorporated. It was still a side project I was working. I ended up getting a job at Best Buy in the analytics department, not like in the store, but in the headquarters in Vancouver. And then afterwards, I left that job to work for a startup accelerator, which is more kind of my thing. Anhack was a side hustle for the first year. Doing this English course. I quit my job and went full-time December 31st, 2015. So since 2016, been working on it full-time. The English course was good. I mean, it was definitely like to me a real business. Like it wasn't, I don't know, making millions of dollars, but I ended up making more money from the English course than I was making my day job. And not that I had a very well-paying day job, but...
So you started off like with the resume builder, but what... By the time that this was, you know, you're making more from this, let's say, quote unquote, side hustle than you were from your job. What was the full offering? Like you're talking about English courses. Was that part of it at that point?
Yeah, that became the main thing is we would do group English courses for software engineers. And we called it like tech English. So there was a lot of business English out there where you can learn about how to, you know, do English in a business environment. But there was no English for software engineers where you can learn how to pronounce like PHP, Ruby on Rails, MySQL correctly, answer common interview questions, you know, talk about just general software engineering terms. Actually, funny story, one of the students, or I used to do all the sales calls for that, or a lot of the sales calls for that program. And I had a call with one guy and I was like, hey, tell me more about yourself. And he's like, yeah, well, I'm a software engineer. I have 10 years experience. I work with Hoare. And I was like, sorry, what'd you say? He's like, yeah, I work with Hoare. And I was like, so what do you, it took me a while, but then I realized what he was saying is R-O-R in Portuguese. The H's are R's or H's. So he was actually saying Ruby on Rails. Just ROR and then with the Portuguese accent. So I was like, man, like, just let's stop.
That's
right
not
here.
Gonna help you.
You know, that's not gonna help you. Can't say that in an interview. Yeah. So I was like, just say, I work with Ruby on Rails.
What were you charging, by the way, at that point? Or what was the business model?
It was a yearly subscription back then. We just evolved it to have two options of monthly and quarterly, but it was, I believe, 500 Brazilian reais. It was the first price per year. Actually, the first price was like one time fee lifetime. And actually, this is another thing that maybe is like a lesson for people is that in the beginning, actually, I would just charge people like very low amount of money for a lot of value just to be able to get sales and get customers and learn.
I mean, the recruiting business was kind of always right there, I guess. But how did it really happen? Like, how did you specifically see that and start kind of going after that part of the funnel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's true what you said about it always kind of being right there. Like I had a notion that there could be this recruiting business because a few people had kind of told me that. And actually when I was working at one of my jobs before, the job I got actually before going to Best Buy was worked as a software development company. And we had to recruit software engineers for that job. And it just ended up being my job to do that. And I remember working with a recruiter and kind of learning about that space, but I didn't really understand exactly how it worked. I just knew that there could be something there. But it all kind of started when we used to go to these Tech Vibes, Tech Fest events where like recruiting fairs, where a lot of the city startups and a few of the larger companies would go into this big conference room and people would, you know, network and try and get jobs. And then every startup would also pitch themselves on stage. So we would take a laptop and do a webinar and live stream the recruiting fair to all of our van hackers, most of them from Brazil, but you know at this point a lot of them from other parts of the world too. And I would go to every booth and say, "Hey, like I'm not just a crazy guy with a laptop. I actually have a few hundred engineers here who are looking for jobs in Vancouver. Would you like to pitch your startup to them?" And so the HR person would, go ahead and pitch. And then I'd be like, "Hey, like, what's your tech stack?" And they say, "Oh, it's Java and React." I said, "Okay, well, any Java and React engineers here? Like, please say so in the chat." And then we had 15 people in the chat say, "Hey, yeah, me. And so
I have to ask, by the way, like, that's not a normal thing. Like, it's really smart, but like, was that a normal idea for you? Or like, how did you even think about, I'm going to go to this career fair with a laptop?
I honestly don't even remember. I think we just went to one with some of the local van hackers, like some of our community members who are in Vancouver already for like the first one. And we were like, "This is really great." And then we would do a lot of webinars. Like webinars were a really large way for us to sell the course. Because what we would do is we would have a webinar and then be like, "Hey, for everyone who joined the webinar, you guys get a 15% discount if you buy in the next 24 hours. And that was a really good sales method for us. We started a lot of digital marketing courses back then, and that was a way that they sold info products. And so I was like, "Well, the best content for us is really the companies. Like who are the companies?" And we make like blog posts, like the top 10 companies to work for in Canada or something like that, like the best startups to join. So I don't know exactly how it's been such a long time. I don't remember exactly like where the idea came from, but I do remember going to two or three of these events. I even went one to one in Dublin and did the same thing in Dublin. I was always really interested in this kind of concept of bringing people who can physically be there to like be there virtually.
The Eastside Games was your first hire. I'm sure that was a kind of a pleasant surprise, but what do you do from there? I mean, you're still running the school. Do you start like right away focusing on recruiting and earning more from recruiting? Or do you have a few of those other kind of serendipitous moments that really awakened you to the opportunity that exists in recruiting?
No, we started going pretty strong on recruiting because we were making, I think at the time, I forget exactly how much it was, but I remember the Thinkific hire, we made more money from the Thinkific hire than all the like new ARR that we added that month for the English school. And there was a lot more work for the English school because like I was giving all the classes, I was doing most of the sales, like I was in Slack 24/7 chatting with people on DM. Like it was a lot of work to service that. But the hire, we just did a webinar and then the money came and then that's it. Like there wasn't any other work there. So I kind of was like, let's go all in on the recruiting side. And then we also changed the price to 15%. We just changed it to 20% of annual salary per hire. I remember making like our first 15% hire, kind of happened really in the funny story. Like I was just waiting for my wife to get ready on a Friday night to go for dinner. And I was like, "Hi, I got some time." And I remember like there was a Java developer I just met and this company Traction Demand was hiring Java developers. So I just sent an email connecting Anthony and Fernando. Didn't think much of it. And a few weeks later, there's like, they said again, "Hey, we hired Fernando," and the salary was 100K. And so we made $15,000 from that. So I was just like, "Damn, like this is incredible." so yeah, it kind of just opened my eyes that this is a big side of the business.
And how did you, like, what were some of the unique things that you did? I mean, recruiting is an old business. And one of the challenges with it being a services business is it's pretty hard to scale. Like you're kind of only as good as the recruiters you hire and these sort of things. Like what were some of the things that you were doing that were unique that you felt like were maybe either more tech enabled or at the very least like more scalable?
I think the biggest thing for us was the community side of things. So building the community. For example, I think I mentioned this a few minutes ago, but our candidates, they call themselves van hackers. So, you know, there's really this feeling of like we're in it together. And I think that started because we have that kind of English school or like education in our DNA of we're all students in the same classroom, working together, friends, and trying to learn and get to the same success outcome. What I think that did is that made people really want to invite their friends to Van Hack, you know, tell them about us and believe in us. We have a Slack group with about 90,000 people in it where we chat with our engineers and candidates pretty often, education, content. So kind of creating that community vibe, which makes it so that candidates are, you know, applying to jobs quickly and we can get candidates that are really good. So, I think that's a big thing. Another thing I think it's important is we did build a software platform, right? So we ended up hiring from ourselves. Our CTO, Thiago, was actually our first employee, still with us today, built out this kind of a combination of a learning management system and an application tracking system. And did a lot of tech work to kind of automate the processes.
Yeah, tell me more about, like, so the candidate side, I think that's a clear edge in the sense that if you're going to developing countries, there's going to be way more engineers or just high quality candidates in general that, you know, will resonate with the value prop because they see the opportunity of living abroad. Maybe they specifically want to learn abroad, they want to make more money, whatever it is, like the kind of ROI for them is pretty clear. What was it like though landing on the customer side? Because there you're competing with, you know, just about any other recruiter who also charges 15 to 20%, who also promises great candidates. What was that part like? Like any stories to share there in terms of like how you got these customers to try you and then to continue to rely on you to make hires, which is not easy.
Generally, the biggest thing was just that we had a lot of senior candidates available. Like, and then we could provide them very quickly, right? So other recruiters would come in and, you know, say, we can probably send you some resumes in a few weeks. And they're probably sending the same resumes as everyone else because there's not that many people who are looking for jobs inside the same city. Whereas we had kind of new fish that we can bring to the pond, if you will. So we had this talent pool. I always say this, and it's true, that there's more engineers who want to move to Canada than there are in Canada right now. Like there's just, you know, probably 10 times more. And especially if you're looking for the ones who are looking to work. And also, it's, you know, you have to say that for startups, they're budget conscious. So they can find a software engineer who's willing to work at a little bit lower rate. That's important too. And then over time, what we realize is our engineers as well, they stay longer, stay for about 3.5 years. So we didn't know that in the beginning because we just were just getting started. In the beginning, was all about like, hey, I have this Ruby engineer and I would literally edit resumes and remove contact information. We also used to send out Excel files where we have like skills of people like here's engineer number one would have 5 years of experience overall and worked with Ruby, blah, 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 and engineer number two and number three and number four. So we just had what people wanted, supply and talent. Whereas other recruiters, I mean, I'm sure they're also great, but they just maybe didn't have as many. And really, I think like when we hit product market fit on that side of things was when we started getting customers asking us for a lot of engineers.
At that point, what were some of like, especially in those early days when you still, like now, I think Van Hack is a pretty known name, certainly in Canada and probably abroad. But in those early days, like what were some of your best tactics to land customers? And how much was inbound versus outbound? And specifically on the, and on either side, what were some of the things that were working really well in those early days?
Yeah, yes. It was all outbound. It was all outbound. Like just cold calling, cold email, LinkedIn, going to tons of meetups, tons of events, hiring fairs, like startup events. I think you and I met at SAS North, I believe, you know, just going to events. So really just, again, hustle. One of my favorite tactics to kind of get people to believe what we're doing is, when I meet someone on a sales call or like go into their office and have a meeting or run into them at an event is I'd ask them, so tell me who you're looking to hire. And they say like, I'm looking for a Ruby developer with 10 years experience. And then I would go to the Slack group that we have and say, hey, I'm here with, you know, CEO of X company, and they're looking to hire a Ruby on Rails developer with 10 years experience. Anyone here with that description who wants to move to Ottawa, please comment here. And then we would continue the conversation. And then, you know, maybe 10, 15 minutes later, I'd be like, hey, let's check, you know, if anyone commented on the post. And then I would pull out my phone again and open Slack. And there'd be like 10 people who would say, hey, me.
That's great.
Right. And it just was like real, like, hey, there's actual people, actual talent. who actually want to work for this company. And so, you know, it's not about just like me talking. I can talk all day, but if I can show you on the phone, like, here's real people, and I like would open up their profile on Slack with their profile picture, and like, here's Pablo, he wants to work for you, right? Actually, we have a lot of people named Pablo get hired. that was, I think, probably one of the best tactics. Referrals were really good as well, as kind of businesses started, because I think with recruiting, it's a double-edged sword. There's a lot of players out there, there's a lot of kind of not so good reputation players out there. So when, you know, there's a lot of noise and it's hard to gain trust, but once you do gain trust and maybe have like a few success cases with a company, like Thinkific, they introduced us to Article, and Article ended up hiring like 20 people from us over the years. So it was just a lot of that. And then we also would do a lot of work with accelerators. And then one thing that we did really well, and maybe we should bring this back actually, is we had these events called Leap, where we would have engineers fly to cities that they want to move to and spend a week living there, and we would set up a recruiting fair with our engineers. So this was really good because all we would have to do to a company to kind of get them to take a chance on us and say like, hey, come to this meetup on Monday night at 5 p.m. at Mars. There's going to be, you know, some beer and food, and there's going to be 15 engineers who want to move to Toronto. Would you like to meet some of them? No cost, right? Just go there. You only pay us if you hire someone. And those were really, really good because we would end up creating kind of like a mini marketplace where we'd have like 10, 15 startups from Toronto, 10, 15 engineers. And then all of a sudden, like the best two would get 2 or 3, 5 job offers. We had this one lady from India, Pritika, who got 5 job offers. A few people got like 5 or 6 job offers during those events.
That's helpful. And then, you know, you went through Techstars. So you kind of went through the accelerator, obviously took some money from them. Did you end up raising VC? Did you try to raise VC, or did you kind of just go more the bootstrap route?
We did Techstars. We did a few other accelerators too that were equity free, one called Startup Chile, the other one called Fit for Start, and then Luxembourg. And after Techstars, and it just general all the time, I mean, I've always like wanted to raise money, especially since, you know, being in the accelerator back in 2021, you know, there's that kind of like demo day, and then just kind of always wanted like that dream of, you know, TechCrunch
hype,
right?
Yeah.
The TechCrunch hype. I've yet to get a TechCrunch article one day. Anyway, and no one would invest in us because they're like, this is just a, you know, a lifestyle business. It's a services company. I got a lot of like the same thing. It's not a SaaS, so it's not scalable. After demo day at Techstars in Germany, in Berlin, we tried to raise €500,000 and it just didn't work at all. And everyone said no. So I decided to focus on customers, and we made more than €500,000 in revenue in the last 3 months of that year. So that was just kind of like a moment for me to be like, you know what, let's not raise right now and just focus on customers and growth. We did since end up raising last year. We raised from a firm from Houston, Texas called Golden Section, which has been great. They're much more like capital efficient, not so much Silicon Valley VC style.
Well, that's great. Well, let's stop it there. Maybe we'll just end on the two questions that we always end on. And so the first one, I think you touched on this a little bit, but when did you feel like you had true product market fit?
Yeah, I think it was when we did the recruiting fair for Skip the Dishes in Brazil. So they came to us and this was like, right, I think it was either right before or right after they got bought by Just Eat. I think it was right after, and Just Eat told them like, scale as much as you can. And they had this really big problem of Friday and Saturday nights having huge amounts of traffic. So they didn't have that much traffic. You think a food delivery app, right? So they don't have that much traffic on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. But then Friday night comes and everyone's ordering food. Saturday night, everyone's ordering food. And their traffic got so big that they ended up crashing. And Daniel, one of the co-founders, was telling me that if they crash, they have this huge, like, because they're a logistics company, and so everything kind of gets out of work and out of order, and it takes them forever to get back. And anyway, it's a big problem for them that they can't have. And at the same time, they were hiring basically every engineer in the prairies, and they started poaching, you know, from their friend startups, and they just became this upward spiral in salaries. And it was a big problem for them. And so they saw that we helped them hire like, I think, 5 or 6 people in a couple of months, and realized that we had a good talent pool. And they asked me, hey, Ilya, like, what can we do to hire as many engineers as fast as possible? So I gave them a list of all these things, like doing the webinar and a couple of the things that I was thinking we could do. And then kind of as a throwaway at the end, I said, well, why don't we fly to Sao Paulo, which is the biggest city in Brazil, And we can rent a conference room and do a hackathon over a weekend, and you can interview, you know, it's a lot of developers in person that way, and make a lot of hires. And they actually went for that. And we did a hiring fair in March 2018, where we had about 300 engineers come in over 2 days, work on a hackathon project, and then do speed interviews with their tech team as well as their HR team. And ended up getting 72 engineers hired from that event. That was like, yeah, this is product market fit right here.
Well, you've helped now 2,000 people, over 2,000 people, you know, really, you could say get a job, but it's much more than that. Really, it's like change their lives. And that's not like, it sounds cliche, but it's real. And as somebody whose parents, for me, like my parents moved from Argentina to Canada, you know, getting a job that enables you to make that transition really does change your life. So the impact that you having is hard to overestimate. So maybe the last question then, which is if you could go back to kind of your younger self starting VanHack around 2014 with one piece of advice, what would it be?
For me, and it still applies to today, is I'm very much like in my head and always wanting, you know, next step and kind of thinking how's the future going to be. So I think the biggest thing is just like stay in the moment, because you can only really control what you can, and like the future is never as good or as bad as you think it's going to be. And I remember like early days and still to this day, like, you know, thinking about what's going to be like in the future, how it's going to be, how we're going to solve this problem, etc. And I think just, you know, being grounded and staying in the moment is a big one. And then, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. And there's a bunch of other stuff too, but
I'm sure. I mean, after 10 years, a lot of things learned, man. So, well, look, Ilya, this was great. Tons of stories, tons of details, and even some outbound tactics that I think a lot of founders hopefully can steal and adapt in their own startups. So thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today.
My pleasure. And yeah, if anyone wants to talk outbound strategy or anything like that, it's always fun for me to do that. So happy to reach. If you reach out, happy to chat. Thanks, Pablo, for having me.
If you listen to this episode and the show and you like it, I have a huge favor to ask for you. Well, it's actually a really small favor, but it has huge impact. But whichever app you're listening to this episode on, take it out, go to Product Market Fit Show and leave a review. Please, it's going to help. It's not just going to help me, to be clear. It's going to help other founders discover the show, because the algorithms, whether it's Spotify, whether it's Apple, whether it's any other podcast player, one of the big things they look at is frequency of reviews. It's quantity of reviews. And the reality is, if all of you listening right now left reviews, we would have thousands of reviews. So please take literally a minute, even if you're just writing like, great podcast, or I love this podcast, whatever it is, just write a few words. Obviously, the longer the better, the more detailed the better, but write anything, leave 5 stars, and you will be helping me, but most importantly, many other founders just like you discover the show. Thank you.